Muggam karoti vachalam tam gurumam khayate girim yatri patamaham bande shugurum dinatarnam. On Sunday, we looked at the first 13 verses of the first chapter. And we got to know a little bit about the character, the personalities of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. And their motivations for wanting to fight. They were keen to fight. Hoping that they would be victorious. Although by the time the army of the Pandavas has been surveyed by Duryodhana, he's starting to get a little bit worried. And the verses that we're going to study tonight, we're going to find out why he was worried in more detail. Because all of the indications are pointing to a victory by the Pandavas. So Duryodhana had very good reason to be worried. Dhritarashtra had very good reason to be concerned about the outcome of the battle. So tonight I thought I would try to concentrate on three things. The signs of victory and it's good to know these. There's about four or five, six possibly signs of victory that we'll be testing you on. So, best to know it if you want to get a good result in your exam. It's my policy to tell you everything that you'll be examined on so that you can at least get those things right. When it comes to the essays and we test your... Because that's just knowledge. Right? And you should know those things. So I'm not going to beat around the bush. We'll tell you, this is what you should know. Basic things. But of course when it comes to analysis, comparison, understanding, all of those things, then of course things get a little more tricky. Then you have to start thinking. That's okay. So we'll look at the signs of victory. We'll discuss the term, the names actually, the names of Krishna that have come up and what they mean, and specifically Rishikesh and Achyuta. And Rishikesh meaning the master of the senses, Achyuta meaning the infallible one. Achyuta can also mean one who doesn't fall down. And Achyuta, specifically in relationship to Krishna being Arjuna's chariot driver, which is significant because he then submits himself to the service of his devotee. So at the end we'll be discussing some of the important points, or some of the, we'll be exploring a little bit about what it means to be a servant of Krishna's devotees, and why is serving Krishna's devotees so attractive that even Krishna wants to do it. And then perhaps, you know, well, why would we want to do it? Or do we want to do it? Or are we avoiding doing it? Whatever. We'll explore some of these things. So,
That's not very
there's nothing to do with it. Could somebody just pick upstairs and grab my pointer? Do you know what it's going to look like?
Okay.
It's black. Looks like a, it's a stylus, doesn't have a pen in it.
Is this on your table?
Yes, on my screen.
Is it on your table?
On the side table, or on the chair, there's something. Okay. When technology fails us, let's just use some reliable means. First verse. Text 14. The task for fire Payayati Mahati Shyandaneshtito Madhava Pandavas Chaiva Divyo Shanko Prahatmatahu. On the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. So, in this verse, there are some signs of victory. Can anybody think back to the first verse of the first chapter and tell me what other indication is there in that verse? One person. Please raise your hands.
Sounds of conscience.
You're not listening. Beep. You get 5 points taken off.
The fact that the battle is being fought at Kurukshetra.
And why is that significant?
Because it's the holy place.
Because it's the holy place. Dharma Kshetra. This is one of the indications that the Pandavas will be victorious, because Duryodhana and his friends are basically, what? Rascals, yeah. And the Pandavas are what? A word starting with V.
Virtuous.
It's mentioned in the purport, I think. Virtuous. So the first sign of victory, right from the beginning, and that's what Dhritarashtra was concerned about. Dhritarashtra was very concerned about the influence of the holy place. Right? Holy place is a very significant thing, and especially a holy place with saintly persons. What's going to happen? In fact, it's recommended, go to a holy place, not just a sightseeing, but to associate with the saintly persons there. So that Dharma Kshetra is a first indication that the Pandavas will be victorious. Text 14. On the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna stationed on a great chariot. Now, it's mentioned here, Madhava. Madhava. What does that mean? That's a name for Krishna. Madhava, the husband of the goddess of fortune, is described. Right? So, the fact that Krishna is present with Arjuna is indicative of victory for the Pandavas, victory for Arjuna. Because wherever Krishna is, then along comes the goddess of fortune. Wherever one is an associate of the goddess of fortune, then one will be blessed with opulence, victory, all the different things. So, because Krishna is there, he's the husband of the goddess of fortune, then this is a sign that the Pandavas will be victorious. Next item. Divyo Sanko. And this is what's causing problems for Duryodhana and Co. In fact, is it in this verse? No, in the next verse, no, the verse afterwards. 16 and 18. No? Not even that one. Did you find it? Maybe I dropped it. No, it's 19 actually. Oh, that's a worry. It looks like a pen. It looks exactly... Oh, hang on a second. Modern technology. And our poor brains that don't work properly. Anyway, this is good. This is... I finished your book, by the way. in text 19, we'll jump ahead a little bit, it's mentioned how the sound of the conches blowing was so powerful. You know, like if you go to a rock concert. I'm sure you all go to rock concerts often. But still, anyway, if you do, it happens to have gone on a big day out, for example, and you're serving out for Shardam. Even rock concerts can be used in Krishna service. And you go past those, you know, those techno tents where they have their, they used to call it doof doof music, right?
They still do.
They still do doof doof. I don't know why they call it doof doof. I have no idea, but anyway. Yeah. The sound, you can hear it, but you can also feel it coming through the floor. So I mentioned here that the blowing of the conch shells was so loud that it could be heard both in the sky and on the earth. Right? So it was quite loud. And it's mentioned here, it shattered the heart of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Right? Very powerful. And those conch shells are described here as Divyo Shankyo. Right? So they're transcendental. Another indication, of course, the conch shell is a symbol of, and we saw that before, Bhishma Dev blew the conch to encourage Duryodhana, but ultimately what did that indicate really? Krishna. And because Krishna is present, because the Pandavas are Krishna's devotees, really it just shows again, symbolizes again, defeat for the Kurus. Not only that, Lord Krishna and Arjuna are stationed on a chariot that has been given by Indra. And Prabhupada mentions that chariot was so powerful that it could defeat all directions. Is that right? Agni, yes, Agni. Indra gave him the quiver of bows, the quiver of arrows that was inexhaustible. Indra. I think Indra's in there somewhere.
Because he was fighting against Indra.
Not in the battle of Kurukshetra, he wasn't.
No, but this is when he was allowing Agni to burn down the Dakshya forest or something like that. Indra wanted to quench the fire. And on behalf of Agni, Krishna and Arjuna fought against Indra.
So that's true, but not related to this.
That's when he
gave him
the arrows.
Oh, that's when he gave him the arrows. Okay. And the other item here is that Chitara has given the horses, the white horses, which were auspicious also. So there we have three main items, possibly four items that are signs of victory for the Pandavas. Then we have a list here. Text 15. Pancha Janyam Rishikesho Deva Dattam Dananjaya Pondram Dadmo Mahashankam Bhimakama Vigodaraha. Lord Krishna blew his conch shell called Pancha Janyam. Arjuna blew his, the Deva Datta, and Bhima, the voracious eater and performer of Herculean tasks, blew his terrific conch shell called Pondra. Prabhupada makes a comment that Bhima is known as the voracious eater. But he was also known for performing Herculean tasks. Prabhupada makes a comment that one shouldn't be a voracious eater and then do nothing. And the devotees laugh when he says that. Lord Krishna, in the purport, Lord Krishna is referred to as Hrishikesha in this verse because he is the owner of all senses. The living entities are part and parcel of him, and therefore the senses of the living entities are part and parcel of him. They're also part and parcel of his senses. The impersonalists cannot account for the senses of the living entities, and therefore they are always anxious to describe all living entities as senseless or impersonal. The Lord, situated in the hearts of all living entities, directs their senses. But he directs in terms of the surrender of the living entity, and in the case of a pure devotee, he directly controls the senses. Just like this morning when we were sitting down for breakfast, and Uddhava said, Krishna's instructing me to eat. And Gangaswara made the comment, how come you don't listen to him when he tells you to stop? So, depending on our surrender, Krishna will inspire us. And actually, Krishna's inspiring everybody. Especially for the Mayavadis, Prabhupada makes the point that for the Mayavadis, he inspires them in such a way so that they like to describe the Lord as impersonal. And they create volumes and volumes and volumes of books inspired by Krishna through giving them the intelligence to do so. But of course that is not exactly Krishna controlling their senses directly. Just like a person who's serving the mind and the senses alone, even though it's being facilitated by Krishna, it is not actually being directed by Krishna. And there is a great deal of difference. Krishna is facilitating all of the movements of all the living entities. Savasya chaham vidhi sani vishto ishvaraha sabhabhutanam. I get this mixed up. Vindeshajunatishtati Brahmayan Sabhutana Vid Yanta Rudhani Mayaya. This is a verse from the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Ishwaraha. Is it 18 or 15? 18. Ishwaraha Sarvabhutana. Krishna is the controller of all living entities. Hridesha Arjuna Tishtati, he is situated within the heart. So this form of Hrishikesh is the Paramatma situated within the heart. And he is providing the facilities. Matasmiti Jnanam Afavanam Cha. He's giving knowledge, he's giving remembrance, he's giving forgetfulness. When a devotee wants to remember Krishna, then Krishna empowers him, gives him the intelligence, gives him the knowledge, gives him the remembrance. When a person wants to forget Krishna, then Krishna also facilitates that, depending on the desire. But all of that facility is provided by the Lord, and ultimately, all of that facility belongs to Him. It's also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita how the Lord has His hands and legs everywhere, practically speaking. They all belong to Him. So He is the master and the controller of the senses. Actually, it's interesting, in my study this afternoon I was looking. Does anybody know which of the Chaturvyuha expansions of the Lord Hrishikesh is an immediate expansion of? Does anybody know? There are four expansions. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
Shira the Kshir.
Chirudakshay Vishnu? Yes, he's an expansion. Yeah, but this is the first quadruple expansion. Yes? Vasudev? Yes, and then we've got quite a bit of competition here.
Vasudev, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Sankarsana.
Yes. Which, if Hrishikesha is the controller of the senses, which of those do you think he's an expansion of?
Vasudeva.
No, it's Aniruddha. Because Aniruddha is the presiding deity of the mind. And the mind is the controller of the senses. Right? Hrishikesh is an expansion of Aniruddha. Aniruddha is the controller of the mind. And of course the mind is the lord and master of the senses, or should be. Especially when a devotee's mind is engaged in thinking of Krishna, then naturally the senses will follow the lead of the mind and will be engaged in Krishna's service. And that's what we see with a devotee like Arjuna. Arjuna is always thinking of Krishna because he's such a close friend of Krishna. Krishna is so dear to him. So he's always singing of Krishna, and then of course Krishna inspires him from within, gives him the knowledge, gives him the remembrance, how to engage in Krishna service. In fact, it's mentioned here that Krishna directly controls the senses of Arjuna. Here on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Lord directly controls the transcendental senses of Arjuna. And thus his particular name is Rishikesh. Prabhupada talks about the different names of Krishna and how Krishna is named according to his function. Actually, Prabhupada mentions in a lecture how it is said that God has no names. In one sense, he doesn't have any one particular name, but he has many names. And each one of those names is dependent upon his function or his relationship with his devotees, practically speaking. Like Govinda means one who gives pleasure to the senses. That'll come up later on. And there's a whole list here. Yeah, the Lord has different names according to his different activities. But in this particular case, he's called Hrishikesh because he's the controller of Arjuna's senses. Yeah, and then there's more information here about how the Kurus, they don't have any of these qualifications. None of the signs of this victory are present for them. Next verse, 16 to 18. I won't read the Sanskrit. Yeah. Why are they transcendental? Because they're engaged in Krishna's service.
And why is Krishna's not?
Huh?
Why is Krishna's not? Because Bhishma is also pretty lowly for us.
That is one of the mysteries of the battle of Kurukshetra. Because even though Bhishma Dev is fighting on the opposite side, still his activities are connected to Krishna in that he's Krishna's enemy in the mood of chivalrous spirit, right? So that is a sub-ras. But why is it described like that? I would suggest for the sake of the story at this point. You know, Bhishmadev's relationship with Krishna is a secondary, you know, what's the word? It's a secondary plot, if you like. It's a secondary, yes, it's a secondary rasa also. In the absence of Madhurya, Vatsalya, Sakya, Dasya, Shanta, Ras, then the other rasas manifest. So he's not acting in a direct relationship. But why? I don't know. It's just not mentioned. But yeah, he's fully engaged in Krishna's service. And that goes for anybody. For you and me, when our senses are engaged in Krishna's service, then that's sevanam bhakti ucchate. That's devotional service. Hrishikesha hrishikena sevanam bhakti ucchate. When your senses are engaged in the service of the master of the senses, that's Krishna, then that's called devotional service. That's the definition. Sadopadivinirmuktam tatparatne vena nirmalam. One becomes purified. One's consciousness becomes purified. When we're engaged in devotional service, then we also become transcendental. That's the brilliance, that's the potency, the shakti, one of the shaktis, if you like, of bhakti. You become transcendental. You rise off of the bodily consciousness, sarva padi vinir muktam. We are liberated from all material designations. Tatparat vena nirmalam. Our material desires become... they go away. Right? When you're chanting Hare Krishna, when you're engaging in devotional service, what happens? Anything happen to you? Purification. How do you feel? Huh? Mind is controlled, yes. How do you feel?
Fine.
Happy! Woohoo! And half the time it's because you're not bothered by do this, do that, what about this, what about that, mind rattling on. Right? Seriously, when you think about it, devotional service is like that. When you're engaged in Krishna's service, then all the worries and anxieties of material existence, they just sort of like evaporate and they go away. When you're in a kirtan, you know, you just feel like jumping up and down. You feel light. That's how you feel. And so there were descriptions, you know, in the character of a devotee, when they're engaged in transcendental devotional service, they jump, they laugh, they cry, they fall on the ground, they roll around. We may not do that right now. But we feel good. We So it's transcendental. And it's not only, it's interesting, you see, you know, it's not just limited to Arjuna. It's not just limited to, you know, big devotees. It's available for even little devotees like us. King Yudhishthira, the son of Kunti, blew his conch shell, the Ananta Vijay, and Nakula and Sahadev blew the Subhosha and Manipushpaka. The great archer, the king of Kasi, the great fighter Shikhandi, Drishtadyumna, Virata, the unconquerable Satyaki, Drupada, the sons of Draupadi and the others, O king, such as the mighty armed son of Subhanda, all blew their respective conch shells. The blowing of these different, text 19, the blowing of these different conch shells became uproarious, vibrating both in the sky and on the earth. It shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. Now, yes.
On the other side, would only Bhishma be the conscious? Is it that he's the only one who's got conscious?
No, it describes how they all blew their conscious. And it's interesting, there's a word there, word. Tumulo, Baba. And see how it's translated? Tumula, tumultuous. So after that, the conch shells, drums, bugles, trumpets and horns were all suddenly sounded. So everybody started blowing their conches. Now, it's interesting to see how the Pandavas had no fear. Because they knew that they had Krishna's protection. Much like a child feels that they have protection when they're with their parents. Prabhupada tells a story of how he was travelling on the tram in Calcutta with his son, and one of the tram conductors was playing a joke with his son, and he said, "Where's your money for your ticket?" He said, "I don't have any." He said, "Well, you have to hop off the tram." And his son said, "No, my father is here." So, you know, a child will naturally feel the protection of their, and not be concerned, even if there's some problem or some difficulty, because they feel the protection of their parents. So similarly also, the devotees, when they feel protected by Krishna, then even if there's some difficulty, it's not a problem. They feel confident. You know, because we see that devotees face problems all the time. Yet because they have Krishna's shelter and Krishna's protection, then they're happy to face the difficulty and the problem, knowing that Krishna will be merciful and protect them. At that time, text 20, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot bearing the flag marked with Hanuman. Okay, this is another sign of problems for the Kurus. The fact that Hanuman is on the flag of Arjuna. Took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra drawn in military array, Arjuna then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. So, the fact that, you know, there's the story that Vrindavasu narrates in Surrender Unto Me, how when Bhima was hunting for the lotus flower for Draupadi, she got one lotus flower come down there. Was it the Kamalaki River, I think? She wanted more to offer to Maharaj Yudhisthira. So Bhima went charging up the mountain to find more lotus flowers. And he came across this old monkey lying on the path. And he yelled at him, you know, out of my way. And Hanuman, well, he didn't say that he was Hanuman, but Hanuman said to him, oh, I'm too old to move. Why are you making all of this noise and disturbing all of the animals? Why don't you just relax? Take it easy. And Bhima, you know, yelled at him, shouted, you know, out of my way. He said, oh, I'm too tired, just move my tail and then he can. Because he didn't want to walk over him, disrespectful. And Bhima tried to lift his tail but couldn't. So then he became a little humble and inquired who he was. And then he realized that he was his brother because they were both sons of Vahu. And it was at that time then that Hanuman gave him the blessing that he would appear on the flag of Arjuna, and that whenever Bhima would shout at the enemy, scream at the enemy, then he would also scream at the same time and increase the potency of his yelling, and so that way strike fear into the hearts of the enemy. So Hanuman was there, Krishna was there, so that's also Ram. And Sita, the goddess of fortune, is always present with her husband. So again, that indicated what? Victory. Yeah.
A really quick point. In Gurukul, we had a dress-up bike competition.
A dress-up what?
Push bike competition.
Right, this sounds pretty important.
Only three bikes entered, right, but my parents put Hanuman on the flag of my bike and I won.
Okay.
Relevant.
We should get flags and we can all stick them on our aerials. Yeah. Now, it's interesting, Prabhupada makes a comment that Arjuna was following in the footsteps of the previous Acharya. Hanuman was the previous Acharya. And that actually this is the mood of a devotee. A devotee is always praying for the blessings of the previous Acharyas. And in that way, then one can actually be successful. Not only that, another advantage that Arjuna had from Krishna being present was that, as Prabhupada mentions in this purport, that Arjuna was able to be instructed directly by Krishna what to do. Another factor in the victory. Arjuna said, O infallible one, is this Senayor Ubhayor Madhye Ratam stapaya me chuta yavad etan nirikseham yodhu kaman abhashtitan kail maya saha yodhavyam asmin rana sabujjame. Arjuna said, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. So, Arjuna is addressing Krishna as Achyuta, which means infallible one, one who doesn't fall down. Prabhupada mentions, although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, out of his causeless mercy he was engaged in the service of his friend. He never fails in his affection for his devotees, and thus he is addressed herein as infallible. Interesting point. He is so attached to his devotees. Especially those who sacrifice everything for him. that he will go out of his way to facilitate the devotee's desires. Depending on the degree of surrender, then Krishna says, I will reward them accordingly. Yayata mantra padjante. What is it? As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. As charioteer, he had to carry out the orders of Arjuna. And since he did not hesitate to do so, he is addressed as infallible. Although he had accepted, but here's the interesting thing, you see, in one sense, taking on the position of charioteer means taking on a subordinate position. A lesser position, if you like. But Krishna actually enjoyed doing that. He enjoyed taking on the position of being instructed by his friend. So it appears that he's taken a lesser position. But actually, it's a sign, it is one of the greatest characteristics of Krishna. He's Bhakta Vatsala, which means he's so attached to his devotees. So even though it might appear externally that he's taken a lesser position, actually it shows his superior position. Although he had accepted the position of a charioteer for his devotee, his supreme position was not challenged. In all circumstances, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Rishikesh, the Lord of the total senses. The relationship between the Lord and his servitor is very sweet and transcendental. The servitor is always ready to render service to the Lord, and similarly, the Lord is always seeking an opportunity to render some service to the devotee. He takes greater pleasure in his pure devotees assuming the advantageous position of ordering him than he does in being the giver of orders. He, at a point in the battle, he created a house to shelter the chariot and a lake so that horses could drink water. He personally took the arrows out of their body and tended to their wounds. In that way, Krishna acted just as a very menial servant of his devotee. Since he is master, everyone is under his orders. So everybody acts in a way that is, what's the word, is subservient to God. Everybody. There is nobody who is above the order of God. Yet, God likes to take the order of his devotee. Krishna says, Janma Mritya Jara Vyadhi Dukkha Dosha Anudashana. Nobody can overcome birth, death, old age and disease. Nobody. So in that sense, everybody has to bow down to God and his order. His order is you have to take birth, you have to die, you have to suffer disease and old age. Nobody can overcome that, of course, except for a devotee. These things can be overcome by a devotee. But then again, under the shelter of Krishna. Yet, he himself, the order giver, you know, it mentions how the wind blows out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sun shines out of fear of the Supreme Lord. He's the most, you know, he's the one to obey. But yet, he himself likes to take, gets great pleasure out of, here Prabhupada says, he takes greater pleasure in his pure devotees assuming the advantageous position of ordering him than he does in being the giver of orders. Since he is master, everyone is under his orders and no one is above him to order him. Everyone is under his orders, no one is above him. But when he finds that a pure devotee is ordering him, He obtains transcendental pleasure, although he is the infallible master in all circumstances. So, Krishna was happy then to abide by Arjuna's order. And he understood what Arjuna wanted to do. Arjuna was prepared to fight. And to engage in the warfare, he wanted Krishna to take him out to survey the scene. Of course, also this underlines a little bit of Arjuna's hesitation, mind you. And it's a prelude to things yet to come. Let me see, text 23, let me see those who have come here to fight, wishing to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra.
The devotee's desires are Krishna's desires, because the pure devotee only desires to satisfy Krishna's desires. Krishna's only desires to follow his pure devotee's desires.
Yeah.
So in fact, Krishna is...
So they're chasing their tails. but the thing is, Krishna is your person, and we are persons. So there's always unpredictability in personal relationships and in personal dealings. Huh? So it's spontaneous, it's not some hackneyed thing. Oh no, I'm just serving my devotee. And they're serving me, oh God, it's boring. Huh? We're just doing the same thing all the time.
How can anything be unpredictable for Krishna?
Unpredictable? He's Leela Shakti. He knows everything, but his Leela Shakti puts him in a position where he doesn't know. So then everything becomes fresh. Whoa, what happened then? So his Leela Shakti covers over his Jnana or Chit Shakti. More powerful. The Leela Shakti is more powerful than the Chit Shakti. Right? Because in the Leela Shakti, he's doing all sorts of stuff. He's just playing with his friends, you know, they're teasing him. Open up your mouth, close your eyes, I've got a sweet for you. And then they stick a flower in his mouth. Oh, what's that? He said you were going to give me a rasgulla, and you've given me a dandelion. Huh? So, you know, his chit shakti could tell him, hang on a second, these guys are just playing you for a fool. But there's no fun in that. The Leela Shakti makes him, and the love of his devotees influence Krishna in such a way so he doesn't know, you know, he's just playing as a boy and he's having fun. If the Chit Shakti told him all the time, hang on, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you should be a lot more serious than there'd be no fun. Huh? So.
Krishna will support the devotee only if they are in the path of religion. If they are not in the path of religion, then Krishna will not support them.
Depends. Krishna is very merciful and very kind. There are examples where devotees have not been behaving themselves, and yet Krishna is still kind to them. Because they're his devotees.
But
on the whole, yes, one should be righteous. Where's an example of a devotee who was not righteous? At least from a material point of view, righteous. Here's an example. I can think of one example from the Bhagavad Gita. Sixth canto. There's an example. Not righteous. Yeah, not on the path of dharma.
Dhritarashtra?
Dhritarasura? Dhritarasura. He was fighting with the demons here. Dhritarasura is an example, not the example I was thinking. I was thinking of Ajamil. Ajamil. He was a gunda. He was a dacoit. A thief. And, you know, he married a prostitute. So, you know, he wasn't a very... But because he was a devotee, he was inspired from within to name his son Narayana. So he always was called, he was always calling the name of the Lord. And because he was doing that in an inoffensive way, then he was saved by the Vishnu Dutas when the Yama Dutas came to take him away.
But still he had to go and purify himself and repent for all the sins that he has committed?
He went and then performed devotional service at that point. But he was freed from the sinful reactions by the Lord's mercy through the chanting of his name. So, now that doesn't mean that we can just do what we like. Right? We still have to be...
Prabhupada says that you have to have proper action, proper behavior. Like,
yes, we do. We do.
The devotees should have proper acharan towards other devotees.
Yeah. But, yeah, of course. Let me see those who have come here to fight, wishing to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra. So he wanted to see who he was going to be fighting with. And then again, in the next verse, although this is in the next section, but I've read it today, and again, the Hrishikesh comes up in this verse again. Evam upto sanjaya uvacha, evam upto Hrishikesho gudakeshena bharata senayoru bayoru matye stapi. Sanjaya said, I descended to Bharata, having thus been addressed by Arjuna, Lord Krishna drew up a fine chariot in the midst of the armies of both parties. And we'll look at Gudakesh tomorrow, Sunday. Okay, so does anybody have any comments or questions?
Yes.
Lovely.
I was wondering, for how long did Krishna
speaks
about the Gita?
I don't know.
Yes, 45
minutes.
So the battle was about to begin when Arjuna decided not to fight.
Yeah.
So they had to wait his 45 minutes so that he could speak about the Gita.
Yeah. Yes, might explain why things happen the way they do in India sometimes. It might explain why things happen the way they do in India sometimes. There was a conversation going on, so everybody had this. No, actually, there's a good chance that a good deal of people heard that conversation and were benefited by it. That's the thing, you see. The fighting was stopped. And because it was a conversation, you know, Arjuna and Krishna are key players in this whole event. Right? They're pivotal to the whole, you know, and it's, you know, one of the Kauravas are probably thinking, "Well, Arjuna's not going to fight. Beauty. We'll win for sure." Because, you know, he's one of the promised. So it's a gripping moment. Arjuna's not going to fight. So what's going to happen? Is he going to fight? Is he not going to fight? He's got doubts. Great. Come on. What's Krishna going to say? Krishna's not going to talk him out of it, is he? For example, anyway. We don't know exactly, but you could imagine the tension that is brought about by the fact that Arjuna's decided not to fight. What are Yudhisthira and Bhima and Nakula and Sahadeva thinking? You know, what are you doing? Because, you know, all of the Kshatriyas have come there, as Prabhupada points out, all of the Kshatriyas have come there with, you know, such enthusiasm for a fight. So it has to be bewildering, you know, that Arjuna suddenly decided he's not going to fight. So it's like, what's going on? So, yes,
is probably in Krishna's service, religion is that much important, because in Gita he says,
in what was the first bit there?
In Krishna's service.
Yes.
Religion is that much important, or if some person is not that much religious, he can do the service properly, because in Gita he says, Sarva Dharma Parikshate Mamekam Sharanam Bhavet. What does that mean?
What it means is that you can be irreligious, but if you take the process of devotional service, then your success will be assured. If you are religious and you stop being religious but take up the process of devotional service, which ultimately is religious, right, then your success will be assured. In other words, if you take up the process of devotional service, whether you're religious or irreligious, it doesn't matter. You ultimately become better than religious. Now, religious in that sense means basically following the religious formulas of the Vedas. Worshipping the demigods, being respectful to your mum and dad, giving in charity, building dharmshalas, digging wells, that kind of thing, right? That kind of religiosity. Somewhat mundane religiosity where you're religious because you're worried about what your neighbours will think if you don't go to the temple regularly. Right? It's a bit like, you know, worrying about what your neighbours think if you don't mow your front lawn. That kind of thing. So it's a fairly mundane, or shall we say materially motivated religiosity that's being... mundane religiosity, which is materially motivated basically, that's what it refers to. Worshipping the demigods for some elevated, in other words, personal benefit, basically personal benefit. Whereas service to Krishna means automatically your personal benefit will be taken care of, but the first consideration is, you know, will Krishna be pleased? Because automatically if Krishna is pleased, then I'll be protected. And that's how Arjuna and the Pandavas were feeling. Krishna is with us, we'll be protected. Okay, we don't have much time. Any other comments or questions? I wanted to think about, I break up into groups, and I want you to discuss why Krishna takes pleasure in serving his devotees. Okay? That's the first thing. Come up with a list of why does Krishna take pleasure in his devotees? Got a message. Possible reasons. Why does Krishna take pleasure in serving his devotees? And then some examples from Shastra. Right? We've got one example here, Krishna serving Arjuna. Right? Then, what I would like you to do is add to that, in what ways do we get pleasure in serving Krishna's devotees? Assuming that you do. Huh? What, how do we get, and some examples of how we get pleasure in serving Krishna's devotees. Is that okay? So we've got 20 minutes basically. So 15 minutes to do this exercise in one, hang on, you guys are all really, say one, two, three. We've got one, two, three, four groups here. How many tables have we got there?
Four
tables. But we should have five groups because there's so many men here, right? So break up into five groups, that way you all get to do something together. And then we've got a group here and a group here. Okay? So that means seven groups. And so the first topic is discuss possible reasons why Krishna takes pleasure in this way. Write them down. Give examples from Shastra. That's the second one. Write them down. Three, describe ways in which we get pleasure out of serving the devotees. Or reasons, sorry, possible reasons why we would get pleasure out of serving Krishna's devotees. And then examples of how we do that. Does that make sense? Okay, 15 minutes. Then we'll regroup to share our What are the reasons for that?
The example for
possible reasons.
You asked for the example.
Okay, over here. Possible reason for Krishna getting pleasure out of serving his devotees. Serving this way. Serving him with Arjuna. What have you got?
You said that devotees are dearer to Krishna than Krishna is to himself, and the relationship between him, the master, and his services are very sweet. And in that way, Krishna wants to reciprocate to the devotees to obtain transcendental pleasure from serving.
Here?
I wish I had one of the points was also the nature of reciprocation. I mean, Krishna is the original of all pleasure, and it's his nature to seek pleasure in a variety of relationships, otherwise he could not be perfect and complete. So the way that manifests is in loving relationship with others. Another reason is that Krishna also sets an example of how one should serve. Like, you know, for instance, as Mahaprabhu, he served Isha Puriyans as an example. So he sets an example of how one should serve his virgin master.
That's a nice one. Yeah? Over here?
The reciprocation he has with the devotees increases the loss.
Has anybody ever tried enjoying just by themselves? Tried that? Oh, there is some enjoyment in being by yourself. Right? A little while. But if you really want to have fun, what's better? One or two? Two. And maybe even five or six or 10 or 20. Examples? Have an example?
Govardhan Leela, when he picked up Govardhan Leela for to protect the devotees.
Yeah. That was for Krishna, that was for the devotees' pleasure and for Krishna's pleasure too. He was looking at the gopis. And the residents of Vrindavan wanted to be able to see Krishna 24 hours a day, every single one of them. So for 7 days, they all got an opportunity to just stand and stare at Krishna and be with Krishna. All of them were all with Krishna 24 hours a day. Every single one of them. And of course Krishna wanted to be with his devotees. And it wasn't a problem for him to be holding up the going downhill. Yeah, that's a nice example.
Just does Krishna actually do something for his own pleasure and his devotee's pleasure simultaneously? Or?
Yeah, there's an example.
Huh?
There's an example. He was reciprocating his loving affection with all of the devotees, so that was pleasurable for him. And it was pleasurable for them too.
Which takes predominance?
Huh?
Which takes predominance?
Which predominance? Which has which dominates? Krishna's pleasure or the pleasure of his devotees? Who could answer that question? Who can answer that question? The pleasure of the devotees. Krishna says the devotees are more dear to me than myself. Right? So the nature of Krishna's love for his devotees is such that he loves them more than he loves himself. So he put himself out for the devotees. In one sense, you know, standing with a, because it's not a problem for Krishna, but it's not exactly the most stimulating thing to do for a week. But it gave immense pleasure to the devotees.
In Damodara Leela.
Damodara Leela? What about it?
It's affection, mother and son. And she tried to
find
the world. Yeah. That she loves the family.
Now she becomes, he becomes subservient to the love and affection of his devotees.
Yeah,
yes it is. Over here? Aaron?
When devotees serve Krishna, Krishna somehow feels indebted to the service and wants to repay the devotees, so he takes pleasure in the service.
Yes.
And so the example we had was Krishna and Sudama.
Yep.
So when Sudama offers like a very simple offering of Bhadraj, Krishna repaid him generously and gave him plenty in return.
More than he anticipated.
Yeah.
He didn't ask for it.
He didn't ask for it, no. Even though he was sent by his wife.
Yeah.
He didn't want to bother Krishna with a request. He just wanted to be there because Krishna was his friend. Not only that, Krishna wanted to curb a little bit of the little tinge of pride that might be there in Sudama. In Sudama's austerity. You know, I am a Brahmana and I am austere. I am an austere Brahmana. Of course, it wasn't quite, that's an exaggeration, but Krishna was also serving his devotee by making him an even better devotee. And Krishna gets pleasure out of that too. Over here?
Krishna Singh, are reciprocating the devotees by serving them because devotees have sacrificed everything for him?
Yeah.
It's just
matter of reciprocation. But how, the reasons for his getting pleasure, for enjoying. But that's okay.
The servant enjoys more in a true eternal master servant relationship.
Sorry?
In a true eternal master servant relationship, the servant enjoys more. So Krishna also wants to enjoy that feature.
The servant enjoys more than the master.
In an eternal relationship.
I don't know. You're telling us. The servant gets more pleasure than the master.
Does Radharani get more pleasure than Krishna?
I don't know.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gets. Radharani's
pleasure is very high. You and Krishna can be from each other.
Great pleasure in giving than taking.
Okay. There's more pleasure in giving than taking. Not sure about that. When I was a kid, I liked to take. I like to take more than give. Yeah, that's an interesting point. There's more pleasure in giving than receiving.
On the retreat, the Long Maharaj gave an example of a 50% club in, I think, the United States, where people actually, their club members, which is give practically 50%, or they inspire each other to give as much of their money as they can.
And that way they're happy.
they actually say that I'm the best thing I've done in my life. There's actually someone there who gives 95% of his wealth to charities.
Yep.
And he said, this is the best thing I've done in my life.
Giving is better than receiving. When we're children, we really haven't understood that. As we grow up, we start to appreciate it. What about examples of, you know, the reasons why devotees get pleasure in serving devotees? What possible reasons might there be for a devotee getting pleasure out of serving the devotees?
He becomes servant of Lord Krishna again.
Yes, but what are the, why do we get pleasure from that?
We have a good relationship with other people, that is also making us very happy.
Yeah.
That you are coming more closer to Krishna?
Yes.
If the servant gets more pleasure than the master, then the servant of the servant of the servant would get more pleasure than the servant of the servant of the servant.
Yes, but what? But that's all sort of on the surface. It's all theory, in one sense. At least I see. You know, how do we get pleasure out of serving others, and why do we get pleasure from doing that?
Because of attachment.
We
get pleasure and getting purified.
Yeah.
Because we're showing our love to them. Expressing our love by serving them.
Yeah.
If they're getting pleased.
That if we please Krishna's devotees, Krishna will be pleased, so he will take notice of that.
But how do you practically do that? How do you practically do it? How do we practically do it?
By following instructions.
And why do we do it? You know, us personally.
Because the relationship.
Kadi, why? What service do you do to the devotees? Yeah, okay, you fix their computers. Now, why do you do that?
That's my knowledge, which I can use in the service of the devotees.
Okay, yeah.
Why?
So you use that because... you do it because that's what you can do. But why do you do it?
They feel happy.
Right? And what happens when they're happy?
They give blessings.
They give blessings. So you're just doing it like a business deal. Just another business deal.
What it is, spiritual business.
Yeah, okay.
More reason is the opposite to pleasure is pain. So if you don't serve Krishna and the devotees, you suffer in the material world.
One of our senior preachers, one of our senior book distributors, this is the argument that he used to everybody to make them buy a book. Why do we do it? You know, sometimes we even get criticized for doing our service, and yet we still do it for the pleasure of the devotees. So why do we do that?
Because
we
feel
very
happy.
Huh?
We get happiness by seeing them happy.
Yeah, we are happy by seeing others get happy. I explained to this group here. We enjoy vicariously, which means, well, one of our enjoyments, or parents. Parents enjoy through their children. Right? This is why they're always pushing them. All the time.
Come on. You can do it. Ah, I told you can do it.
And they go and tell their parents, oh, my boy, now he's in, you know, he's doing this degree and that degree, double degree, and that degree. Now he's in Australia working hard. A parent, for example. The parents work hard for their children, right? look after your children. Wake up in like 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night in a row if you're lucky. Right? But then when their child stands up and starts walking, they think, oh, it's fantastic. What a great achievement. They're very happy. They didn't do anything themselves. But they're happy just at the fact that their child is now standing up and walking. And of course, you know, now he's in the kitchen sink cupboard pulling out the death hole and trying to think it. So he's just now become a great enemy to the rest of the creation. But they're happy. They're happy. They're happy. And they've gone to huge endeavours and austerities to do that, and yet they're happy. And we also go to quite great lengths. What's another service that you do, Koti, to the devotees?
Cooking.
Yeah, Saturday Pishavan. Now, why do you do that? You're a cook, I know you're a cook. You like to cook. But why do we like to cook? For others. You're not going to be able to eat 3 buckets of upmai by yourself. In fact, you know, you generally don't eat a good... Most cooks that I know like to feed everybody else first before they eat themselves. And they're satisfied just by seeing other people eating. They're happy with that. And when everybody's happy and talking, and then they're really happy. They're all absorbed and they're just, you know, talking and carrying on. And the cook is just in ecstasy. And he wants to say, have more, have more, have more, have more, have more. So he's giving of themselves to others. And yet in one sense there is a selfishness in that, because he's enjoying also. But it's a very selfless kind of enjoyment, in one sense, because his enjoyment is simply in the enjoyment of others. So now, where does that come from? If everything has a source in Krishna, then where does it come from? From Krishna. So Krishna illustrates that actually service to the devotees is very satisfying. Service to yourself is okay. Right? And we don't mind, you know, people doing service for us. Right? But actually, more relishable for a person is to serve others. If you analyse it, if it's done with the proper motivation and with a mood of friendship and, you know, affection. And then automatically Krishna is pleased. That's fact. Krishna is pleased. But you know, say if we're distributing prasadam and people are happy, we're not really thinking, oh, now Krishna's pleased, oh, now I'm happy. It's not a mental exercise, you know, that you go through. It's actually something that you feel. It's a feeling. It's an experience. It's not just some mental thing. Any comments or questions?
You can get pleasure out of showing off your skills to the devotees. Yes,
you can. I'm a great dancer. The brahmacharis. Make sure they're looking at Krishna. Yes, we have to be careful about that one. If we're dancing to Krishna, fine. Someone have a comment?
Devotees are very happy and welcoming to other devotees.
Yes.
So they always glorify other devotees. It gives us a lot of pleasure. They always think of
so we're looking for their glorification.
No, not that sense. We don't want the glorification because it makes us proud,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Right.
condition or they come from, but the devotees are loving and open hearted and, you know, they are non Indians.
Yeah.
So that is very easy to relate to them, and they understand our both are for our mission is the same.
Yeah.
So that they understand what we are thinking and what we are speaking.
So we like to please the devotees because of that. Yeah. Yeah.
They don't exploit us.
The devotees don't exploit us.
No, they
do. No, but actually that's an interesting point. See, these relationships can be easily exploited, but then nobody wants to do the service anymore. And the thing is, when you're doing the service for the pleasure of others, then the reciprocation will be the reciprocation will be reciprocated. Can't think of an alternative word. There will be reciprocation in the same kind, if not more even, if it's not exploitative. As soon as there is, yes, sir, hey, I'm Krishna's devotee, right, then the level of pleasure experienced by the other devotee will actually diminish. Do you know what I mean? So it shouldn't be done in an exploitative mood. It should be done in a reciprocal mood, in that you're serving me, okay, now let me serve you. No. Let me serve you. That's how the devotees. Do you know what I mean? As soon as somebody is saying, serve me, serve me, serve me, then it starts to get a little bit problematic.
And if I was to say that I'd like to serve the devotees because it helps me to make advancement, would you say that was being selfish, that was a selfish sort of thing?
Something you'd like to say?
Or is it different because it's
well, I would say it's nice to serve the devotees because it may clear obstacles in my path so that I can continue serving the devotees. The only reason why I'm here is actually because of the mercy of the devotees, not because of any qualification that I have. And so in one sense, here's another comment that I want to make. Is actually we're not making advancement when we think we're making advancement, because we're not doing anything actually. Ultimately it's all coming about by the mercy of Krishna's devotees and by the mercy of Krishna ultimately.
We can be serving the devotees only because we have a lot of affection for them as well, but we simply love them and we want to make them.
But sometimes you don't have that. When I first joined the temple, I thought, what am I doing with these kooky guys? I don't like any of these people. But I did like serving, I learned to like them. Eventually I became one of them. So, you know, in the beginning we have a material conditioning and we don't see, or we don't relish the relationships that we have with the devotees as much as we do as when our, you know, advancement is more secure and more developed, our devotional service is more mature, and then we actually do have an affection for the devotees. But I remember when I used to think, wow, what am I doing here? I don't have any relationship with these people. But now, it's completely different. Sorry?
Expectations?
Yeah. What about them? Expectations on devotees? Depends on what they are. That phone call is for me. Well, you should really get me on my mat, though. I think we should finish. 10:30 on Sunday. Thank you. The homework will be up tomorrow morning.